Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness. And I happen to be in one of the portals, one of the spots of evolution, Sedona, Arizona, tonight. And I have on the phone with me Elliot Maynard, and he is going to be one of the keynote speakers of the magic and mystery of life and afterlife. Welcome, Elliot. Give us a little background behind this upcoming conference. The conference dates are October 17th to 19th, 2014. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Give us a little background about what this means, the life, afterlife, the mystery. I mean, you've just written a book called Brave New Mind, and you go into that kind of area a little bit. So give us a little info about this.
Yes, this is one of the 25 aspects or facets, if you will, of a new operating system for humans and planet Earth. Now, what this means is that it involves working with the quantum field, which sounds maybe highfalutin in physics terms, but if you could imagine an intuition or an intuitive consciousness field, you will have that concept. So I relate from my own personal experience. One of the 25 aspects of this new operating system is afterlife communication or after-death communication, depending on how you want to speak of it. And I had, in 2007, my former mission partner and wife of over 25 years pass away very, very suddenly. And in addition to that, by the time I got down to the hospital, which she was helicoptered to, I had to close down her machines. And sometime before she passed, she told me something that I really didn't want to hear, and that was, if you love something, you must set it free. And that brought up some old and painful memories, some past relationships. It was like a knife twisting in my gut, but I thought about it. And when this happened and my wife was flown to the hospital, never regained consciousness, I had to shut off her machines as she would have done for me, I was determined never that bond should continue, and so I worked with an after-death communicator for about 2 years to process my own grief. And in the process, I learned a tremendous amount about afterlife or after-death communication. Essentially, if people could begin to understand that death is essentially a graduation, and we should be having ceremonies of celebration for these people, imagine what a different world this would be if people were not taught to fear death. As I was as a child, I used to say prayers, don't let Grammy and Dad and Mom die and all this. You know, that fear of death can be transformed into a leaving behind of pains and aches and sorrows and mistakes and graduation into a new realm.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I didn't realize that about you, Elliot. I've known you for a while, and I didn't know that aspect of your story. And you're going to be sharing more of this with other people, of course, like Danny and Brinkley, who've had a couple of near-death or death experiences. Annie Kagan, who wrote The Afterlife of Billy Fingers about her brother she was communicating with. So life is a continuum. Life exists. And I think what you're saying is, if we know there's nothing to fear, life in itself becomes more magical.
Oh, absolutely. And what a different world it would be. And the other thing is, you know, every once in a while somebody dies, and I tell people, if they never liked the person and if they made their life miserable, don't be afraid to say, I'm glad to be rid of them, you know. So it becomes a whole new transformation or transition. And throughout my own experience, I went on to, through this after-death communicator, which I will expand on in my presentation, I was able to process things that were left unsaid between myself and my beloved departed, and also it apparently works the other way. So you have resolution, relief of all that pressure. You still have to go through the grieving process, but at some point, you will wake up and you won't be grieving anymore.
Well, because you know they haven't gone anywhere in one way, right?
Yes, and I have actually lived this dream so well that I sort of hesitate to share this in some ways because I'm a bit embarrassed about it. But I was very busy recently. The anniversary of this was in September, and I simply forgot about it. And then I thought about that, and I said, this is wonderful because, you know, my departed wife would be delighted, and she's still working with us. And my present wife is, not only that, she's working with her and open to this. So doesn't that make the world and the afterlife much different places than we're told in the various scriptures?
It's incredible. If this kind of paradigm shift could really take hold as a general understanding of the new world view, this changes everything about how our society functions. And I think it's an important shift. So thank you for your work and for your new book that's just out, Brave New Mind, where you go into more details about these new ways of looking at reality.
Well, thank you, and I'm delighted to put these ideas forth because I've gone through a lot of hard knocks to get to this place, and that when you get to the point where you feel on top of things, you also have to share it with others, and so this is my gift to others who are in bereavement or perhaps will change their viewpoint of death.
Okay, I will talk to you soon, Elliot. Elliot Maynor is one of the keynote speakers of the upcoming Magic and Mystery of Life and Afterlife in Sedona, October 17th to the 19th. The proceeds go to benefit the Twilight Brigade. And to get tickets, you can go to heartwisdomjourneys.com to get tickets for this upcoming conference. I'll talk to you soon, Elliot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. I really appreciate what you shared because you went to a deep place there, so thank you again.
Yeah, and isn't that nice I can do that without any tears?
Yeah, well, tears are okay, too.
Oh, yeah, I spent probably 2 years crying, so but now I don't have to cry anymore. So when other people cry, I say, hey, come on out and let it out, man, you know. Some people did that came out here because they were releasing. Happens all the time now. Yeah. So we all.
I think it's going to be a great. It's going to be a great conference. So.
I think so. Who knows what's going to happen at that one, right?
Magic.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks for being part of the magic.
Where are we? Well, we're in Sedona. It's magic all the time.
Yeah, I just sent you that interview, which is hot off the press, with Jerome Glenn, who's head of the Millennium Project.
All right, good. I'm going to get to my next guest, but I'll talk to you about it.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thanks. That was Elliot Maynor, who's one of the keynote speakers here at Magic and Mystery Life and Afterlife in Sedona. And another keynote speaker I'm sitting with here today, who has been somebody I have followed and honored his teachings because he's one of the major influences in a field that I've been fascinated about, crop circles. I'm sitting here with Bert Johnson. Thanks so much, Bert, for spending some time here with me.
Yes, great. Great to be together.
What I always liked about you is that you are excited about the mystery, about the unfold, and we don't have it all figured out. Like this guy was, Elliot was saying, something else is going on here.
Yeah, I caught a fold in crop circles 20 years ago, thinking that I would just solve that.
So wait, when you first saw the crop circle, you thought, oh, someone must be doing that.
Not really, because my very first experience was really strange. And it's a long story. And
well, a little bit.
I will tell you a little bit. I caught interest in this crop shop because I saw it in the newspaper in Holland. I tried to find it, couldn't find it, and yet I did find it. By the time I had spent an hour in that crop shop and walked back to my car, I noticed that actually from the place I had found it, it was impossible to see. So that really shocked me. I thought, how is this possible? The first time that I came to this field, I just saw it sitting there. But that's impossible. You cannot even see it from here. And that made me go to England, but still thinking I will crack that in one season. I will just go there one summer, and then it's all over. And that's 20 years ago. And since that time, I've been every year in England.
I know you have, and you're one of the really key researchers because you have a scientific mind, yet an open mind to say, well, I don't know. But what was the thing? So you went to Kraken, you wanted to figure it out. When did you figure out that you couldn't figure it out? What was that moment, like you're saying, there's a bigger mystery going on here?
It's this series of synchronicities. Already the very first year, my very first crop circle in England turns out to be very mathematical.
Uh-huh.
And I have studied mathematics, and I thought, oh, that's normal. Seemingly we all have that. Mm-hmm. It turns out later that this was a very specific one. It was only one of the very few who had very obvious a mathematical formula encoded. And I thought, what are the odds that I step into that one? I could have stepped in any
but
other
what
one.
Year was that?
That was 95.
And what was the circle?
Winterbourne Bassett, and it looks very much like one of the theorems of Pythagoras.
Oh.
And that struck me. And then, of course, I heard all the stories. People are making it. It's all a joke. And I thought, that's not that easy. Let's look at the geometry, because this one Pythagorean crop circle made me really interested in that. And then it turned out the geometries that were underlying the patterns were so intricate that it were not people from the pop doing it. There was something much bigger going on. And at the same time, I saw twice a ball of light floating over a field.
Mm.
I heard stories, and I thought, this is so much bigger than we think.
Right, of course. Doug and Dave Bauer, who got 100,000 pounds to come out and say, we did the crop circles, and that satisfied people's need, and they could write it off, because if you accept crop circles as something that's undefined, it means your whole view of reality has to be reevaluated. And people, that makes people uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah, the uncomfortableness is in the fact that it's a question and no answer.
Yeah.
And people have very great difficulties living with the question. They can do it for a while, but then comes a moment that you need an answer. And I've even seen that with people that went around crop circles for years, and then came that one moment that I could see it in them. They needed an answer.
Right.
And the best or easiest answer is to say, you know, it's actually all a joke.
Yes.
And that's so easy.
That's you're right. That's so key, because that gets us to a deeper issue that is really behind your work. That there's a mystery going on planet Earth that cannot be explained by what our science is telling us. There's a bigger, it's a science. I think that life is a science, life, afterlife. There's a science, but we have not evolved far enough along in our intellectual and spiritual evolution to understand that science.
Perhaps we'll never really understand it. Perhaps it's a thing that just you absorb it will do things with you, but you will never understand what it did. It's like logos from companies. Now, for me, one of the key moments was in the mid-90s when I met this very young guy, Robert van den Broeke.
Uh-huh.
He was, I think, 16 or 17 years old, and he had this really strange connection with crop circles. He could feel when they would happen. He was still living with his parents, and then he would say sometimes to his parents, oh, I can feel it. I feel it in my whole body. It's happening. And his parents first did not take that so serious. But then the next day he would say, Dad, we have to go out. He had no car himself or whatever. Dad, we have to go out. We have to go there, because something happened there.
Right.
And very reluctant, the father would do it. But arriving at that spot then, sure enough, a circle would be there. And that's how that started with this young boy. And when I met him, I thought, you see, it's bigger. It's so much bigger.
You know, I hear a high-pitched sound right now. Do you hear that? I just feel like there's something happening. As you said, the nose just went off. And a high-pitched sound out of this ear. I don't know what that is, but I just heard it right now. So, but Robert Vandenbroek, of course, you say it right, because you're Dutch. But he's been a guest on this program, and he's still sensing. I mean, years later, when was that? Was that 20s?
This was in the mid-90s. We are now in 2014, and it's still happening, and it's actually, it has evolved in a way. Yeah. For instance, in June of this year, he came back from a meeting, and again, he still has no transportation, means of transportation himself, so a friend was driving him. And while we were driving home, he got that feeling again. He said, oh, I can feel it again, it's happening. And he could see what it would be. So he saw five circles, small, bigger, and the biggest one with the ring. And he could also see the field. So he said, well, let's go to that field. And that was still a drive away, but finally they got to the field. When they arrived at that moment, they see a ball of light floating over the field, disappearing in the crop. And so they both got excited. They think, oh, it has happened, and we are in the right spot. They run in the field, and there's nothing there.
Wow.
And so they are really surprised. And right in that moment, Robert is saying, oh, wait, something is there's some presence here. And he just had spoken those words, and not even 2-3 meters in front of them, bang, five circles fall in the field. Takes about 3-4 seconds.
Right in front of them.
Yeah, the circle is happening. You see.
Well,
so this is a lot of things going on. Two people witnessing it, but Robert predicting it. So this time element is really interesting as well. It still hasn't happened, and he knew that it would happen. He thought it had already happened. So when he came in the field, he was disappointed, but then it still happened. So this is so complex, and for me, such a good example of how intricate this whole phenomenon is.
Well, it also shows you that Doug and Dave obviously are not behind it. But I know other strange things happen with Robert. Images appear on digital cameras that he touches and takes pictures. Images that know of people who've died. Incredibly. A phenomenal thing.
It's really, you cannot even describe that. It's so much. It's what you say. It's people appearing in his photos. People will come up to him with they bring their own cameras and they'll ask Robert, "Can you make photos?" And then suddenly there will be a cat in one of the photos, and the owner of the photo of the camera will say, "Oh, that's my cat. The cat died a year ago. How is this possible?"
The thing is, it's not possible from the old way of looking at reality. So that's why I want to talk to you, because we're at the cutting edge of redefining reality. That's why I call this program New Realities, because there's something else going on that human beings and people like Robert are at the forefront of accessing something beyond what made sense, what makes sense to the old mind.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing is that I used to call it the other world, and then I realized that's actually not a good word. The better word is the bigger world. I think it's actually all around us, but we fail to tune in. And every now and then we see glimpses of it, while Robert is tuned in many, many more times in a much deeper way. So he has much more contact, but we all somehow can touch that world. It's not totally untouchable or unreachable.
We do touch it with synchronicities. I mean, that's like, oh my God, Deepak Chopra tells a great story about he's calling someone in England to get a number of someone in Los Angeles. He's driving along. He pulls off the highway. He stops in front of him, writes down the person's address, and it's the address he's sitting in front of. You know, I've had incredible synchronicities too. You know, but
so these situations with Robert and the crop circles, I see that there's a really strong parallel that these synchronicities and being in touch with this bigger world, called together, hand in hand.
Yeah.
And we miss it many times. We say, oh, wow, that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
But if you start paying attention, you'll see these coincidences, they stack up, and then suddenly you will realize, what's behind this? How can it be? It looks like there's a bigger force actually pushing me in a certain direction.
Uh-huh.
And that's happened to me in the crop circles.
Like what? Give me an example.
That I, for instance, I had to study this geometry that I felt later on, oh, that's strange. But even the first crop circle, I had seen it in the newspaper,
uh-huh.
but the newspaper did not say where exactly it was. So I had to drive around.
In Holland.
In Holland. I drove around, and then the moment I kicked up, I see it. And then later on, it turned out you could not see it. And I thought, what happened there? How is it that I drove that stretch and that I could see it? It's like something was helping me and telling me, you have to go to England, Bert. Do you get that? You have to go to England. Even though you don't believe it right now, you think it's all a joke, you're going to crack it within a year.
Uh-huh.
But in hindsight, there was something was pushing me to go to England. And in England, it was pushing me to study certain things. And then I met Robert, and it's all not a coincidence. There's something behind it, and it can be me. Perhaps it's a higher part of myself.
Well, it is. It's not separate from anything.
And so a higher part of myself tells me, Bert, pay attention. You're not paying attention, but that will help you a little bit. And just kicks me a certain direction, and I look around and say, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing here? I mean, we hear you are in the heart of a new consciousness in Sedona. Something else is I think it's about listening somehow to these messages that are moving us through. We have become vehicles of something, the bigger life.
Yes, this bigger world. And the listening, it is not that some people are privileged and the others not.
Yes.
We all actually can make that connection. We just have to pay attention and listen or feel or see. It's whatever you want to call it. But it's open to everybody.
But most people do not give themselves the opportunity.
No.
They're in a 9-to-5 job. They tune out that voice of knowing, and they've disconnected. So this next paradigm is about connecting us to the mystery that really is leading us into something.
And now the funny thing is that when you go to England, and of course England is the place of Stonehenge and Avebury, so there's a lot of things already going on.
Mm.
But if you go to England and you visit the crop circles, you will see suddenly it becomes easy to open up again. Suddenly you're in a whole different mindset, and you start recognizing all these synchronicities and all these things. And it can be that that's the only reason that these circles are here. Just to...
Well, I don't know. I think that's one aspect of it, but I think there's the designs themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Are
sure.
Messages of either technologies and geometries and dimensional doorways. I mean, because if what you're saying is true, we don't really just exist right here in the physical body.
No.
We are extensions in parallel time, higher...
Yeah, let me give you another example, because I have a laptop here, and I just clicked this one photo there. We're looking at a little crop circle. I will tell you the story around this circle.
It's a 2003 Netherlands-Holland crop circle.
So a certain day, this Robert, he's on his bicycle. He's bicycling just outside the village where he lives with his parents, and he sees this ball of light. He's very used to that, so he's not scared. But he does notice that this one is pretty big, so big that before he knows it, the ball comes towards him, and he's totally in the ball of light. Now, that sounds total crazy, I know. He feels how his bicycle falls away between his legs, so he's seemingly lifted from the crowd. The next thing he knows, he sees these lights out of his corner of his eye flashing by, and he's hearing a sound. What's going on? Then he realizes he's laying next to a highway, and the lights are cars, and the sounds are the cars going by. Pow, boo, boo. Later on, it turns where he woke up is about 10 miles from where his bicycle, actually where he was bicycling.
He teleported, or lifted, or floated.
Whatever happened there, he had the jacket on. The jacket is gone. And then it takes a while, but he noticed that next to where he woke up, there's a little crop circle. And his jacket is in that circle. That's the circle we're looking at. And the highway, you can see a little bit in the back of the picture. You see a high.
Oh, I've never heard that story.
It's things like that. That's time, space, seemingly is totally not relevant. And the picture is so much bigger. And what you say, 9-to-5 jobs keeps us totally away from this.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to tell people if they want to hear more about Robert Vandenbroek's stories, you can go to bltresearch.com. Nancy Calvert, who runs that website, is she's sort of a caretaker of Robert, a big fan, big friend, and has researched all of Robert's paranormal or not or just
normal.
I mean,
normal,
normal to most people to him. Phenomena. So, but Robert truly is one of the visionaries, one of the leaders. So, because someone like Robert is so open and probably born expanded, he can have this phenomena happen to him. And whereas most people are 9-to-5, there's no room in their life to have something like that.
Yeah,
or they go crazy.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Robert has told me many times. He said, it's not always a gift.
Yeah.
It's not that it's always a beautiful thing because it's so difficult. It takes so much of his energy. He said, you can actually be glad and happy, Bert, that you don't have that. Even though you're very interested, you want to learn that, and I do.
Yeah.
But I also believe him that I do only want to see parts of it, and perhaps I'm not ready for the big, big thing yet.
But what if the world was ready for that? If we all lived those realities, just think of the incredible planet being.
I think that it would already change dramatically when we find our way back to our what I call hyper-intuition.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really awareness, really aware what's going on around you, because that's the moment you will see this world is much bigger. If everybody would do that, the world would look totally different. And that's the only thing you have to do is, you know what, I just go in silence and try to heighten my senses and see what is the world actually about. And
mm-hmm.
if everybody would do that, we would have a total different world already.
We have to get out the box of our perceptual limitations. You know that quote by William Blake, if the doors of perception were unlimited, we'd see things as they really are, infinite, you know.
Yeah.
We are so conditioned. We don't even realize how conditioned we are. That's why we're not having these incredible phenomena. That's happening right here.
Yeah, Einstein said, actually, intuition is our greatest gift, and science is its servant.
Right.
But somehow we do honor science and we've totally forgotten about the gift.
Yes, we honor the servant. Yes.
And so he actually was saying, from try to go back to your own intuition, to your higher intuition. We all have it. And then you will see how easy this other world suddenly talks to you. It will help you. It will show you things. You think, what a coincidence. What are synchronicities? It's not just synchronicities.
So how do we live? I mean, you're at the cutting edge. This is something strive for. But, I mean, I don't know you, but it's like then you go back to your normal life and you have your food or your dinner. How do you stay? How can one stay on the edge of this mystery?
Unfortunately, you can't.
I think we can, but
it's so difficult because one group will not do it yet, and so you have still to pay your mortgage and you have to pay bills and that.
Well,
and those people that also who want to see the money, those people also live on this earth, and they are not there yet. They're not, because they see it as a 9-to-5 job. So we have to do that nearly collectively to make a really a mark,
I
think.
I so do think there needs to be people step out of the system and say, no, I'm going to live the mystical life. You know, they talk about mystics appearing in history, and those are the odd people. I was coming into a time where the social consciousness could be one of mysticalness.
You can do it actually on a smaller scale. The first time I came to Arizona, to Phoenix, was in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I was invited to do a lecture on crop circles, and there I am sitting, no, you see, now the cancer already, I'm sitting in the front row because I'm one of the lecturers, and I'm about to go on stage, I'm the next one to speak. The one before me is Nancy Talbot.
Uh-huh.
It's really a strange coincidence, and see, her lecture is all about Robert, who I know very well. So I thought, oh, that's a coincidence. I go into my own world just to concentrate, and then suddenly the person next to me pulls my arm. And I think, what is this? Pulling my arm? And I look over, but she's just taking notes. She's not doing anything. I think that's weird. So I go back into my mind again, and it happens again. She pulls again my jacket. So I look over again, and again, there's nothing going on. She's just taking notes. Right in that moment, Nancy is done with her lecture. I have to go on stage. I see this woman walking out of the lecture hall, and I think, this is really strange. The hours after that, I meet her another two or three times. And then the fourth time, I meet her at the bar, and I look at her and said, now I need to know. I need to know this. Now, I could have let that go totally,
no.
But I paid attention. And actually, in the end, I married her. She's now my wife.
Wait. The woman you were sitting next to
at the lecture,
did you ask her if she pulled your arm?
Yes, and she never did.
But something...
I'm sure it was so physical that I looked up and really disturbed because I tried to concentrate.
Did she think it was weird that you thought that she... Thought?
Yes, of course she thought. But we started talked for many hours. I invited her to come to England to see the crop circles, and she did, and we never left each other's life anymore.
That's a great story.
But just, it starts with a little thing. I could have totally have ignored this pulling at my arm.
What was pulling your arm?
Don't know. It could be, again, my higher self telling me, pay attention.
And you did pay attention.
And that's the thing. Pay attention. Because it happens the whole time.
It happens every minute.
Yes.
What if you would have said then, hey, are you pulling my arm?
You never know what would have happened.
But
I don't know. I didn't say it. And so at the moment, actually, I wanted to talk to her. It was my turn to go on stage. And she even left the lecture hall, which really made me disappointed.
Did you think you'd never see that woman again?
Yeah, and I thought, she's not even interested in me. She even doesn't want to see my lecture.
Wow. Well, that's a great story. And but it also brings us to this book that you're very excited about that you've been researching. And The Boy Who Saw True. And tell us about that, because this is another angle on the mystery, isn't it?
Yes. The book is a diary of a young boy that lived in, I think he was born in 1870, so he lived in the late 1800s.
1870.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when he's about 10, 11, 12 years old, he's writing this diary, and he's describing what he's seeing. He's seeing all these lights around people, and he thinks it's totally normal. Mm-hmm. And then... he tells his mother about somebody who has really not good lights. And his mother asks him, lights? What kind of lights are you talking about?
And this is before anyone knew anything about auras or chakras or...
Yeah, perhaps they did, but he didn't, for sure not. Yeah. He was somewhere in the countryside in England.
How old the boy?
I think he was 11 or 12 years old. And then the next thing, he sees some kind of entity in the garden. What you would call an elf or a gnome or something. So he tells his mother again, say, oh, wow, look in the garden. And that's the moment that the mother really gets angry and says, you should stop it now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the moment that the boy is withdrawing, and he's just writing in his diary. He gets a private tutor, and this private tutor also doesn't really believe him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tells the private tutor, said, I know you don't believe me, but I know that you were in a big boat many years ago on your way to Canada. You met a woman there. You fell hopelessly in love with her. You thought you would marry her. And a few days later, you meet that same woman again. And on second thought, you thought, I'm actually not even that much in love with her at all. So you never married her.
Mm-hmm.
And the man looks at him and says, how do you know this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it starts, that the tutor becomes interested.
Right.
And so the boy is seeing the things and the man writes because he cannot see and write it at the same time.
Oh, the tutor writes the book as the boy recites.
The parts in the diary is actually written by the tutor.
Uh-huh.
And you can see parts are written by the boy. But the things he describes are so totally amazing and so, for me, so totally normal. Now, the book is really good because it's written in a childish fashion. He's totally innocent. He didn't want to have it published when he was older. He said, no, I'm not going to have this published. It's my private little thing. Mm-hmm. When he died, his wife, actually after a couple of years, said, okay, let's publish it. It's important. And that book became known as the book that's the title, The Boy Who Saw True.
What happened as this boy grew up? I mean, did he have continue to have experiences?
Yes.
Or
yes. But he never, he wrote actually a second diary, which he lost in the train. So that's gone. And later on, he wrote less and less about it. Mm. But he kept actually that gift. It became less. It was much less when he later on when he got older. But he always had that gift. Mm. And that book, you should actually read it because it's so beautifully written. It's so innocent that it has to be true. The way it's written down, it has to be.
I believe, well, look at, Robert Vandenberg. He's alive now. He's had amazing things happen to him. There's so many people.
One more story of Robert.
Yes, please.
Because, so these are things that are so far out that you have to know the boy to know this really happened. So there's the following story. He has an aunt and that dies, and she was very much into butterflies.
Robert,
yeah. And so about a year or two go by, and then one morning, Robert feels this strange energy that something has happened. They go downstairs. There's a photo of his aunt, beautiful photo, standing on the little table. There are flowers next to it, but the flowers are burnt. Scorched.
Mm.
Under the photo is a really big pile of white powder, and in the white powder is a huge tropical butterfly. And the butterfly is really about 25 centimeters in diameter, a butterfly that does not exist in Holland. We don't know this butterfly, it just materialized in front of the photo.
It's a living butterfly?
It's a dead butterfly. The butterfly is still there, so you can see it. He calls his friend. It's in the middle of the winter. He says, Roy, you have to see this. So Roy comes over in his car and looks at it, and he's just mind-boggled about this. After an hour, he leaves the house. Robert walks with him to his car and says, what is that on your car? And there is a second butterfly. Another tropical butterfly dead in the middle of the winter.
Another tropical butterfly.
On the windscreen of the friend's car. And that butterfly is still there. Both butterflies.
So where?
They are still in the house of Roy.
Preserved?
Yeah. They were. They had them preserved, and they are now nice in boxes. You know how that goes. So
yeah, the glass.
That.
Yeah.
And so it's things like that. I know it's so far out there that you think this cannot be true.
I love it. Of course it's true. You know, India, there's a lot of that. Have you been to India?
No.
I saw...
Not with my conscious mind, but who knows?
Swami's materializing powder out of their hands.
Yeah.
Or there was one temple in India where there was this big statue of a cow, and it looked like it was sort of out of place. And I said... Why would they put, they're so into design there at these temples. Why would they put that cow out of place? And someone said, oh, that cow grows every year. That statue gets bigger every year.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's like something's going on. So there is, we're citing the far out, the mysteries, but the mystery, like you said, is in each moment.
Yeah, and it's all around us. And
yeah.
Somehow we forget to tune into it. And every now and then it happens spontaneous to people when they have a vision or they actually do see something really physical.
Yeah.
I have had it happen that I would, like my wife just stepped in the door, that we were in England together, and she would say, oh, wow, see, look at that big bird there. And I would look and say, where? And she would see that, and I didn't see anything. And the bird would fly towards her and would actually never change in size. So you would think it would get bigger the closer it got. But that never happened, and suddenly it was gone. But I, standing next to her, never saw it. So one of the two was tuned into this other world, and me, on that occasion, not. I just looked at empty space. I didn't see anything there.
But you saw the vision, and she saw the bird.
She saw a big black bird, yeah. And this is not a story in itself. Many people, especially in crop circle country, because you hear a lot of stories there, will tell you that. There's even this guy from London, Donald Fletcher. 2000, he walks up a hill with his video camera. He's just this camera starts film, and he's seeing a ball of light. So he said, what's that? So he films it. It's on film. He has a friend with him, and the friend never saw it.
Right.
So not only did he see it, the camera also captured it. And still, the friend next to him never saw it.
Well, that happens a lot with UFOs. Two people will be looking at something in the sky. One person, yep. Either they are switched off, which means they have put on, yep. Or their programming is so dense that they are not allowing themselves to see anything unusual. Like, you know that famous video of the gorilla that walks across the basketball.
Yeah.
I show that all the time when I'm giving lectures about new realities. And I have to, I show it once. I said, just count the balls.
Yeah.
Most people don't see it. And I said, did you see the gorilla?
And you never saw it. Yeah.
Never saw it. What's there? And then I show it again. And I had to swear to this one woman it was the same exact video. She refused to believe it was the same video. Because we're not programmed to see the bigger reality.
Yeah, and I still believe that we can tune in. So even though you're not really programmed, you can train yourself to become more alert.
Well, then how? Let's do a practical part.
The practical part, what I do, and everybody can do that, I go lots on walks in nature.
Uh-huh.
And that brings me to a certain state of mind. And I try to remember that state of mind. So I'm aware of the fact, oh, I feel like this now. I'm not thinking about all kinds of daily things, just enjoying nature. But I am aware how I feel. And so when I'm in crop circle country, for instance, I try to regenerate that feeling.
Uh-huh.
So I try to bring myself in that same feeling again. And then things like what I told you earlier about Khani Musan would pop up. Other people would just turn around the corner. Simeon Hine, a remote viewer who lives in Colorado, I once needed him. I thought, I need Simeon. And the next thing I know, he's walking in the street in somewhere in England. How can this be? It's that. So you bring yourself in this other state of mind, and then all these things happen.
Yeah.
And you can say, but that's all a coincidence. It's all just pure chance.
But it's not.
But it's not.
There's no way to explain synchronicities. I'm sure everyone's had synchronicities that are inexplicable.
Yes.
Just totally inexplicable.
And everybody can train themselves to become more aware. I'm not saying that everybody will have the same amount of experiences, but they will actually increase. You will get more of
them. Yeah, I think getting out of the linear mind, wide-eyed view, that wide-eyed staring where you're not focused on something, but you have a wider vision. Or when you listen to sound, don't make out the words, just listen to the murmuring ear. You're activating the right brain, which I think is connected to the source.
Many people have had the experience that they were taking a shower and suddenly they had this brilliant idea, had an answer to a question that was really haunting them for days. That state of mind you're in on the shower, if you can really capture that, that's actually what you want. And then you become more aware that, oh, this is happening.
Yeah, because we're controlled by we've been left brain brainwashed to just think everything has to be logical and linear. And I think what you're saying on your walks and everything, you're getting out of linear awareness.
Yes, that's how I train myself to, how does it feel when I'm out of that linear awareness? How does it feel? And everybody can actually do that. There's good books written about that, how you can bring yourself in this state of mind. And then you will see that it happens the whole time. A few months ago, I went out for a whole day with a Dutch filmmaker. He didn't believe this. And I caught him so tuned in that it happened also for him.
Yeah.
That's all. He suddenly saw these things, a statue of a king, and that all made sense to him. And there was a building he couldn't find, and suddenly this whole story began to live in his mind. And he told me, but I see this whole story. He said, "That's it. You see, the other world is helping you. This bigger world." It's not really planting into your head, but you're tapping it now. You're helping yourself to see and hear the bigger story. And he was totally shocked.
No, he should be shocked, because suddenly the reality he thought was true starts to have holes in it, and
yes,
and this non-linear awareness, which is really us becoming part of the mystery. We're not necessarily here to solve the mystery,
oh,
here
no.
to be a part of it.
Yeah, and Sophie, that's a very good one, to be part of it. And for me, it started with this strange crop circle experience that really pulled me out of my linear life. Mm-hmm. I used to have a very nice business in Holland. And
as what?
I had a business that would train business people to become even better business people, to make more money. And to.
So you were just totally into money? And
Oh, yeah.
You weren't into any of this mysticism?
No. I was interested in things like quantum physics because of my mathematical background. But I was totally not in all these woo-woo things.
Right.
It's only that I saw that picture in the crop circle, this crop circle picture in the newspaper, and that in itself is really interesting. That touched me.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, in hindsight, why did that touch me?
Yeah.
Actually? Why would that speak to me in a way that I actually caught in a car and drove into the countryside?
And
when I talked later about this with my colleagues,
yeah,
there was no connection anymore. And in the end, I had to sell my company because I could not combine the two worlds.
They thought you were one of the lunatics, didn't they?
Yeah, don't do business with that man. He's totally lost it. So you better stop doing business with him.
Wow. So you had to leave that.
Yeah.
And there was no... And they still are there making the money and doing all
this. Yeah.
And thinking that you lost it.
Likely, I've actually disconnected a little bit from that whole area.
But it's so strange that dichotomy. You lost it, but in a sense, you found it. You know?
For me, I found it. And perhaps for them, I lost it, and it's not this incarnation that they will go through the experience.
But
it could be a next incarnation.
You know, that is such an interesting intersection there, to see how people then will just keep perpetuating old thoughts because that's their safe, secure, predictable world. And there was something in you that was willing to let that go, to look at, and what was that? Was there something earlier in your childhood that opened you up to mystery, or
perhaps that I'm organizing now tours to England.
Yeah,
I take all these people then to the crop circles, and with a substantial amount of these people, the same thing happens. They come because they think from, oh, that sounds interesting. Some come because, let's say, a therapist has told them you have to go there.
Mm.
And many of them have that aha epiphany in England, say, wow, and it will never be the same anymore.
Right.
I even warn people, say, do realize your life will never be the same anymore. And don't blame me for it. But this is an opportunity. Doors will be opened, and some of you will step through it, and it will never come back.
But, you know, just that is proof enough that there's something to these other realities. Because, you know, I pursued this, and I said, well, is there really something to this? You know, crop circles, UFOs, interdimensional beings, channeling. Is there something to that? And
I came to the conviction, for me, there's so much more to it. There's such a bigger world.
Well, I thought if there wasn't anything to this, I'll check it out, and it'll just be empty, you know. It'll just be...
It would be disappointing.
Yeah, it'll just be that thin. It'll just, you know, in a day or two, you see. And then you go through that door, and you know what? There's no going out the other side. It just, go through, and it's just endless. It's the mystery pulls you in and sucks you up. And
there comes a moment, and it can be when you make the final transition, that you will enter this world, and then we will look at each other and think, how is it that we didn't see that? How is it that we were so limited?
We could do that right now, though. I think the paradigm that's coming is that we enter this world, and it becomes the manifested reality, so we laugh now, and you can look at those guys, not to judge them, the people you used to work with, and say, how could they not know that?
Of course,
these
I've asked
things...
myself that. And I was very courageous to, there was this magazine, a very business magazine, and I have written articles in that because I thought I actually have to give you the opportunity to see this and to taste this. And I was totally shocked that they would just flip by, oh, yeah, interesting. And that was it.
I know your mouth is like, interesting. Hello, this is not just...
Yeah, you know me. You know that I'm very left-brained. I'm down to earth. I'm very grounded. I would not come here to you if I didn't think here's something really important going on.
Right.
And still, that was not enough. That was not enough. They thought I totally lost it and totally...
But doesn't that just show you how restricted and limited some people want to stay? They want to stay this way because...
And that's good. First, I thought, no, that cannot be, and you have to change. So I became this man that would try to convince them.
Right.
Well, now I've much more come to a situation that I think I will share it. And if it's important for you, you will pick it up. And if not, you will just live on your life. And I'm not going to convince you anymore about it.
Right. It does get frustrating, but it's like...
Just going to share it. That's
how frustrating. Could you not see this as something amazing here? You know...
I don't have that drive anymore to convince.
Right. Yes.
Not to be. I used to be fairly fanatic about that even, and I made a few documentaries that would really try to push that whole thing through your throat. And I think, no, I will just bring you there.
Yeah.
That's why I do the tours as well. We'll bring you there. I will show you the path, but then you have to walk it yourself.
Right.
It's your life, your path.
What do you think of UFOs, ET? I mean, have you had experiences in those fields?
Yes. UFOs, I think it's pretty obvious they're here.
Yes.
And it happens. I think, on the other hand, that many things that occur to people are much more from this bigger world that is always here. And that is somehow confused with UFOs and aliens and alien abductions.
Right.
And if you go that far, I think you have known John Mack.
Yeah, I did know John Mack, yes.
John Mack, just a month or two before he had this fatal accident in London, I was lucky enough to have dinner with him.
Uh-huh.
And he told me during that dinner that he came more and more to the idea that the people got abducted, that many of them were not abducted by aliens, but they actually had stepped in the bigger world that's here.
Uh-huh.
And they came back thinking that aliens had done it. So something really had happened to these people. It's not that they make it up or they're lying or something. Something really happened, but it was not from outer space. It was more from the space around.
But who are the little grays then? Who are these grays that a lot of people see? I mean...
I don't know. I've shown you a few photos that Robert took of the late John Lennon.
Yeah.
And some of them have this feel to them that you think, oh, that's a cray.
Yeah.
And so I'm not so sure anymore about these crays. It can be that many of them actually are entities that live here in a parallel world with us.
Right. So there could be extraterrestrials, if you want to call it, but they're interweaving with this bigger reality, you're saying.
Yes. I have come to that conclusion, yes.
Well, I think we could agree there is a bigger reality. There is this thing that pops its head out when incredible synchronicities happen. You know, it's like, how does that all line up when you're thinking of someone and they're, 1,000 miles away and they show up on the sidewalk in England or something like that? So but I think humans are in a situation where we can start to create ideas about how that happens. You know, we may not have the right formula, but I think our creative mind can, like Einstein, start to understand the mystery somehow. And I think this is the next stage of our quantum evolution. And we need that to bring the rest of the society forward. We need to start to create new theories about this bigger reality. That's just my feeling.
We should take it more serious, that actually it is there.
And well, not just more serious, but start to formulate structures.
Yeah, or not. It can be that that's, again, a left-brain approach to it, and then you should not do that thing. No, let's not do that. Let's not try to superimpose our physics laws into this bigger
world. No, new
physics. Let's just first be open. Let it happen.
Right. But, you know, Ken Wilber calls it the transrational. You know, he says the primitive consciousness would believe in superstition and all these things. And then there's the rationalist that came forward and denied all that. But then there's the transrationalist, like we're discussing, believes in the mystery, but to the rationalist, this seems pre-rational. And I'm saying we can create a trans-rational science that includes the mystery.
Definitely. I like that concept.
And I think we need that. And we're still in its very early phases.
Yeah, lucky.
Yeah.
Because now we can discover lots of things.
Yes.
I always was very jealous of these people like Columbus who could stay in a little boat and then discover America.
No, there's way bigger things to discover. We have yet.
Exactly, and that's up to us.
And it's so right here, right in front of you, Bert. Right here.
It's very exciting. Imagine that we have discovered it all. The generation that lives then, that's totally boring. There's nothing to discover anymore. While we are just at the brink of putting our little sailing boat there into the world and sail off to the bigger world.
Right.
And so...
We're right at that place.
So we're very lucky.
We are. The mystery is about to be revealed to us in a larger way.
Yeah, we do that ourselves. We reveal to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it's been very exciting talking to you. How do people reach you? Your website, your...
My website, the best, is my personal website, Bert Janssen.
.nl.
BERTJANSSEN.
Okay.
.nl, Netherlands. It's from the Netherlands, .nl. Or my more crop circle-oriented website, and that is cropcirclesandmore.com.
Well, thank you. It's exciting work. I hope you continue in the crop circle field because your deconstructions are very interesting. I know we're wrapping up, but, I was at a lecture you gave, and you talked about this one pattern, and you're saying, look, to make this pattern, you had to have created all these other squares and circles, and then you had to... erase those squares and circles to get the final.
Oh, you paid attention. Good. I love that.
And once the crop is knocked down, there's no way to stand it up.
Exactly.
So how does that happen?
It told me two things.
Yes.
The geometry and the mythology behind it was very human-like.
Yeah.
But it also showed it cannot be because of the steps that were not there. So it told me, Bert, we're very closely related to humans. But we're not really humans in the traditional
sense. Well, how did it tell you that we're closely related?
Because it used the same way of thinking in the geometry.
Oh.
And it used, let's say, a compass and a straight edge, our limitations. It used the limitations of humans to show me, your limitations, but then we skip one step, so we're not really that limited. But we'll follow first your limitations. So we are very human-like.
Yeah.
But we're not really like humans. And I thought, wow, brilliant.
You know what also? That also occurred to me in the 888 crop circle. I was up in the hills above
Milk Hill.
I was there sleeping out at night because everyone knew on 777 the crop. Everyone thought there'd be a crop circle on 888.
You were in the good hill. You were in the right hill.
Was right hill. I missed the formation, but we came down early in the morning, and of course there was the 8 there.
Huge.
But it wasn't an ordinary 8. It was the Mobius strip 8 with that. So they gave us something we were expecting on 888, August 8, 2008. They gave us an 8, and they gave us much more than the 8. They gave us whole configuration. So it's just what you said. They gave us the logic, and then they gave us more than that.
I think to them, somehow on a deep level, is us.
It's us.
Yes. So we gave it to ourselves. But we still cannot understand that element of ourselves. But so that part, that facet. Also where this young boy is writing about the boy that saw true. That facet of ourselves that he's confronted with, we somehow have not found a way to communicate with that on a continuous level.
But I do think we're here to become that in this lifetime. If possible. For the planet, for humanity, that's the hope.
I'm totally for that.
That's why people come to Sedona, because they believe that's something.
And it is a magical place here.
It's a magical place for sure. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. Bert Janssen for On New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com.